This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to PocCast, a weekly audio dialogue between Pakistan and the West. We're podcasting from Redmond, Washington, USA on June 19th, 2007. This is Volume 3, Installment 16 of PocCast. I'm Ethan Casey, author of Alive and Well in Pakistan.
And I am Nasser Aziz, producer of PocCast.
And with us is Asad Faizi.
Hello.
And Asad is our man who keeps track of current goings-on in Pakistan. What's going on?
A lot of things are happening, but probably the most interesting of them all is the judicial movement that started on March 9th. And today, after almost 3 months, it is not only going, it's still on, but it's getting stronger and stronger.
Actually, I think it's been 3.5 months now. It began on March 6th and today's June 19th. So that's going on 4 months.
I think when it started, the government, some of the people from the government side made the statement that it's only going to last probably a week, 2 weeks at most, because generally it is considered that the people have the span of attention for a week, and especially with extremely hot weather in Pakistan,
you know, this time of year,
time of the year, with the temperature going to, you know, like literally 130 degrees, 140 degrees, it was expected that it would probably fizzle out in a week or so. It's been, you know, such a long time, and actually, if anything, it is growing in popularity. Just yesterday, the Chief Justice took another trip from Islamabad to Faisalabad, which is the third largest city of Pakistan. And again, hundreds and thousands of people came out in the streets to welcome him. And the trip that normally takes 4 hours ended up taking him 22, with the people all along the road stopping him, throwing garlanding him, throwing flowers at him, and coming out, you know, with such fervor and enthusiasm to, you know, to just have a look at him and cheer him on.
Just like his epic journey to Lahore a month or two ago.
He has actually taken many epic journeys. His epic journey to Lahore, then to Peshawar, and, you know, to Abbottabad, and now to Faisalabad. I mean, this is a phenomenon. This has never happened in the history of Pakistan.
So does he still? There have been stirrings that maybe he's a presidential possibility, or that, you know, this whole movement is becoming politicized, or can or should become politicized to become a political movement to oust Musharraf. Is it turning into that?
Well, clearly. The politicians, especially the opposition politicians, have been trying for the last 7 years to bring people on the streets, and they have not been able to successful at all. And now they are trying to, you know, ride the wave. It looks to me that people are not coming out because of politicians, but they're coming out for the Chief Justices.
Nazar, what does this mean to you?
I think what matters to a common Pakistani is independent judiciary. That's what the cause is here. Democracy, theocracy, and all that BS that goes along with it, people are not buying that anymore. We have experimented with the military rule. We have experimented with the civilian rule, the corrupt leaders, including Nawaz Sharif and Benazir and everybody else and in the line. And when Benazir comes, or Nawaz Sharif or Musharraf, at the end of the day, the poor person, the average person, or the middle class in Pakistan does not benefit from it. The people who benefit are the ones who are sitting on the top, what we call elitists all the time. But with this judicial crisis, what is evident is the Pakistani people understand the core reasons, and they know exactly what's going to protect them. And that's the independent judiciary without any government influence. So, you know, if an average Pakistani goes out on the street, and some cop goes out and beats the crap out of him, today that person cannot go to the court and sue him or go after him and have full you know, accountability for that. With independent judiciary, that's what he gets. And I think that's where the whole issue is, and I think that's why people are behind this Chief Justice.
Now, there's a whole history to the judiciary and its independence, or rather lack thereof, throughout Pakistani history. And I mean, one of the obvious things that comes to mind is the last civilian prime minister, Nawaz Sharif, who caused his people physically to attack the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a difference between that and what Musharraf is trying to do now in terms of controlling the judiciary?
I think the situation is different, and I probably Asad can talk more about that in detail. I mean,
sure.
But I think that the times are different, the strategy different, and at that time we didn't have open and free media. Today we have that, and again going back to, like, you know, giving the credit where it's due, thanks to Musharraf. But now people have seen it. People understand the issues. People watch the issues. I mean, all these proceedings are live on TV. People get it now. It was not like that. The media was controlled, even though it was a quote-unquote democracy of Pakistan, right, under Nawaz Sharif or Benazir. But media was censored. It was under government control, and so was the judiciary.
I think Nasser hit the nail on the head. You know, I think we have talked about it before. I think it was probably not possible in the circumstances of Pakistan for independent judiciary to exert itself without the support of an independent media. So that's definitely a very important factor and the key. But the fact is that judiciary has a very dubious history in Pakistan. That fact cannot be ignored. This is the first time ever that the judiciary has really exerting itself and has really stood up. In the past, you know, the bar has stood up several times, but the bench never did.
Uh-huh.
And this is the first time that bar and bench are coming together to exert the independence of judiciary.
Against the executive, against the president, against the army, even.
Against the establishment, against the army is the establishment.
Actually, everything. I think the ultimate winner would be the people of Pakistan.
Okay, now here's a difficult question. If it's true that the people of Pakistan get it and what they want essentially is an independent judiciary, they see that as you know, the institution that is worth fighting for them. Even if you have that, you still have to have somebody holding power at the executive level, and there has to be some.
See, at that point, it does not matter.
I think I would agree with Nasser that if you look at Musharraf's last 7 years in the government, Musharraf has an excellent record of turning around Pakistan's economy, and I for one would like a continuity in that. I would like to see Musharraf's policies, and the key is I would like to see Musharraf's policies continued for another 5 to 10 years. Now, unfortunately, in Pakistan, if history means anything, we know for sure that every new government which comes into power, you know, makes sure that all the work done by the previous government is completely thrown out of the door. And they it's not that they have a better plan or better ideas. It's just that they want to put their own stamp in it. And that's exactly what happened between 4 consecutive tenures of Nawaz Sharif and Benazir. None of the governments actually followed or continued with the policies of the previous government. I don't want that to happen. And it's for that reason alone, I think Musharraf should continue for another 5 years, because its economic strength is very, very, very important for Pakistan. Pakistan has, in the last 7 years, the size of Pakistan economy has more than doubled. The per capita income of Pakistan has more than doubled. And Pakistan now has enough money for the first time in the history to spend on public projects. Right?
Now, all the doubling has taken place under unusual conditions unusual geopolitical conditions, and also at a time when you've got the U.S. establishment sending a whole lot of money to the Pakistani establishment.
Well, actually, this has been debated. It's a very interesting point.
Interesting point, but different issue.
But not only just different issue, but this very factor was debated. The U.S.'s, if you count everything, all the aid that U.S. is giving, and not just aid, but even the soft loan, Not only that, but so there are three main sources of use. One is the direct assistance to Pakistan. One is the loans that,
right.
And the third is actually U.S. reimburses for to Pakistan for the use of the military infrastructure and, you know, like oil and, like, for example, Pakistan Army provides the complete logistic support of U.S. in Afghanistan. All the oil used by the U.S. Army in Afghanistan is supplied by Pakistan Army. You know, like, you know, a lot of things like that, right? If you even consider that, which is really, you know, like a reimbursement of the goods, if you include everything, it is less than 10% of total, you know, budgetary inflow of Pakistan. So I think it's just a fallacy that U.S. Pakistan economy, probably 7 years ago, it was true because the economy, the size of economy of Pakistan was less than half. But today, so perhaps by back then it was 20% or 25%, but today it is less than 10%.
And there was a report that came out last week. I think the fastest growth in the world today is in China, and the second one is not India; it's Pakistan. So that tells you something.
Like, on the average. So I think I think there are a lot of, if you analyze things, if you really go with the facts and data, the picture is very different. If you talk about the perception, it's very easy, because that's one of the things that opposition is saying, that, it's all because of the U.S. support for Pakistan, the U.S. support for
Pakistan. It's all BS, and we know it. Yeah. And then if we circle it back to the judicial system and the judicial crisis in Pakistan, I think the independent, solid judiciary will support the system, will keep it cohesive, right, without any political influence. It will address the social issues and ills, like in the victimization of people, the poor people, right? It will support that, and not support, you know what I mean, like, it will protect them, right? The
independent, protect Christians and women and
women. And so it will automatically, you know,
poor people, right? I mean, minorities, they have the right too, but I mean, but they are maybe less than 5%. But I'm more concerned about, you know, like 70-80% of the poor Pakistanis.
Right. But Christians are Pakistanis as well, and they're particularly vulnerable because they're
A
minority. I understand that. What I'm saying is that, yes, I don't want to put too much emphasis on the minorities, and because I think even the poor Pakistani, the Muslim Pakistani, is also oppressed by these, you know, the feudals and the elitists, right? So it's not just a Christian which is being oppressed by Pakistan. So, judiciary is for everybody.
Yeah, for everybody, for you know, for human rights, for women rights, for whatever the hell rights you can talk about, only the judiciary is the one that protects those.
So you think that this movement, if the judiciary can really establish its independence in this crisis,
right,
coming out of this crisis, that no matter who's in power at the executive level, that's going to be an improvement for Pakistan as a society?
Yeah, because the people like Nawaz Sharif and Benazir, who have been corrupt, and that's been proven, right, will not be able to wing their influence in Pakistani politics that way. Then if they do something like that, then they become accountable. And once they become accountable, it's the judiciary that's going to go after them and nail them in the head.
You know, the judiciary will be independent of them, just as it is of Musharraf.
Exactly. Like Musharraf, you know, kind of shot him on the foot by doing just that, right? And now he's in trouble. Although he's a dictator, he's supposedly a quote-unquote brutal dictator, whatever, you know, whatever the leftist Pakistani, you know, label him as. But he's the one who fell victim to this whole judicial crisis himself.
What are the choices for Musharraf?
A, he tries to get himself elected from the current assemblies, which may not be possible anymore because of the judicial crisis, because this is going to be challenged and come to the court. Second is that he tries to get himself elected in the next assembly. He holds a fair election, very fair election, and hopes that his supporters win a simple majority, right? And then try to get elected from the next assembly for the next 5 years. Again, there are political risks involved because unless there is a change in constitution, it's not a clean solution. It can be challenged in the court. The third choice is that he makes a deal with somebody like Benazir or Nawaz Sharif, holds a relatively fair election, and then because Nawaz Sharif or Benazir cannot understand something, that in the current according to the current constitution of Pakistan, Benazir cannot be prime minister because nobody can be prime minister more than twice. So now she also wants a constitutional change, amendment in constitution that allows her to be the third term prime minister, and as a quid pro quo, Musharraf can, you know, make a deal with her and say, I'll let you be the third time prime minister, and you let me
remain
the
constitution,
remain the president for the next 5 years. So that's a quid pro quo, and that's a constitutional amendment, so it cannot be challenged in the court. And the fourth option is to completely and entirely rig the election and win 2/3 of the majority. And then
in a phony baloney kind of way.
Phony baloney constitution amendment, mm-hmm. and give himself. I hope he doesn't go with the fourth choice. It looks more and more likely he's going with the third choice, making a deal with Venezuela.
Now, people like Bina Sarwar would say Musharraf has no business being president. Case closed, next case. He was not elected. Benazir was elected, and Nawaz Sharif was elected, as flawed and corrupt as those people might be. At least they're civilians. They were more or less genuinely elected. Musharraf is a military man, has no business being there in the first place.
To say they were genuinely elected is like a bogus statement. And I want to tell the leftist, this is bogus.
Why would you call the liberals leftists? What?
See, leftists are always, of course, anti-army rule, which is fine. And then they go too pro-Western. You know, they bring in lots of Western values within their culture, which is fine. But then what my problem with them is they try to impose those values upon others, and that's how they gauge every other Pakistani. That's where the problem is.
I think there's a measure of intellectual dishonesty here from the side, because, you know, like, for example, in U.S., if we look at U.S. and U.S.'s policy and Bush's policy, they really are not after democracy in Middle East. What they want to see is their own favorites get elected or be in power, right? So as long as, Fareed Zakaria, the establishment boy, says that democracy is not enough. Western democracy mean that the person who fits the profile that U.S. wants and the West wants, unless they get elected, it is not acceptable to them. So the intellectual dishonesty that embodies people like Bina Sarwar is that they have it's not that they're after any principled stand of democracy. They would not like to see, for example, Qazi Hussain Ahmad or Fazlur Rahman, if they are elected by the people of Pakistan as prime minister. They want to see Benazir as the prime minister. They have their own favorite, and they have their own axe to grind. And that,
I think that I think you make a very salient point, Asad, and I would like to reiterate the invitation that we made a couple of weeks ago. I think that Bina Sarwar or somebody who holds similar views ought to be on this show at some point and have a conversation specifically about these very issues, and that's a standing invitation to anybody. Come on the show, give us a call. My email address is ethan@podcast.com, and I'll arrange it. If you think that Nazir and Asad are full of something or other, then
I posed a few questions to Bina, and I think she hasn't had the courtesy to respond to me yet. So this is an open invitation. Please respond to my question. And those questions,
for the record, as far as I know, Bina has been very busy lately. So let's not single her out in particular.
Very busy lately too.
Bina out. I'm saying that the so-called liberal element within Pakistan, you know, like, I have nothing personally against Bina, but I think she's part of that the liberal pack. You know, they're pushing their own agenda. No different than the Qazi Hussain Ahmad and Fazlur Rahman of the Pakistan, who are pushing their own agenda, as intellectually dishonest as these people are.
What's your agenda?
Well, this is very interesting. I like to see somebody who is really sincere about Pakistan. And there's one person, in my view, who has really grown in a stature a lot in Pakistan, who is really
Barack Obama, right? I'm just kidding.
Well, Pakistani Barack. Well, yeah. I think it's Imran Khan who's really done a great job. He's really truly middle of the road.
The guy sounds sincere. Every time I listen to him, he sounds sincere.
Every time I listen to him, I have my respect for him.
He's genuine. He's not into those political slogans and all that BS that comes with it. Right?
Does he have the genuine? Does he have what it takes to be a true national
leader?
He's not
an establishment boy, if that's what you mean. He does not have the establishment support, mm-hmm. but I really believe that even without establishment support, he can win because...
Let me connect the dots. I'm waiting for this judicial crisis to be over pretty soon. And of course, in the favor of the courts and the in favor of judiciary. Once that gets settled and we have these upcoming elections, these democracy thumpers sitting in U.S. will have no friggin' chance in Pakistan. And people like Imran Khan and the likes of Imran Khan will the ones who are going to emerge, because people are going to pick the people to represent them, the ones who are going to protect the system, not these old proven corrupt politicians.
I just want to make a quick point that Imran Khan, for the last 10 years, have made the independence of judiciary his main political motto and his his major manifesto point. He's the one, I mean, this all thing, Chief Justice has taken a stand now like 3 months ago, and he's going for, but Imran Khan has been pushing for judicial reforms and an independent judiciary for the last 10 years. And that's why if you look at how many hundreds of thousands and millions of people are coming out in the street in support of the Chief Justice, because as Nasir mentioned earlier, having an independent judiciary is important to the people. And somebody who represents, who symbolizes the independence of judiciary in Pakistan is really Imran Khan. His party's name is also Tehreek-e-Insaf, which means the movement for judiciary,
justice.
For justice.
Yeah.
The movement for justice. Yeah. So anyway I look at it, he's smart, he's intelligent, he has a lot of integrity. He has taken on MQM. I know
in London within recent weeks.
Yeah, the thugs and goons of Karachi who are ruining Karachi and destroying Pakistan. And he has taken on and he has taken the case in Britain, in their home where it really hurts. And he now has support for the likes of George Galloway and British parliamentarians. He's taking the court.
He knows the system, the parliament, the police, so
he's the man for Pakistan, no doubt about it.
This message has been paid for by the Imran Khan for President campaign committee.
Yeah, Imran Khan for Pakistan. Yeah, there you go.
Nazir, going back a couple of minutes, you were, I think, going to mention the questions that you raised with Bina.
I think the questions were, I'm not going to go into the details of those questions, but mostly she was talking about, having some rallies in the major cities of US and I don't know what for, and I asked her, what are these rallies for? Are you trying to promote democracy and make us look like a banana republic on the streets of US? What's the deal, no agenda. And then she was talking about some, human rights people getting involved, media getting involved, getting in touch with each and every senator and representative in the US state and district. And I'm like, Pakistani caucus has been there for forever, and they probably have like four senators on their side. So,
plus, I think Nasir, you also mentioned that they are, one of the things in their plan was to actually go and meet the U.S. politicians and senators and stop U.S. support.
Yeah, I was getting that, and then they wanted to go to the senators and say, "Hey, stop U.S. support to Pakistan, especially the military." Right, and I'm like, "Wow, every Pakistani, average Pakistani, poor Pakistani, rich Pakistani sees this stuff, and they're like, what are you trying to do?
Look at it from another angle, right? If the weaker Pakistan is from a conventional military point of view, because India is 10 times the size of Pakistan, the army is 10 times the size of Pakistan, there's more reliance on the nuclear weapons in Pakistan. So, I mean, these guys don't even realize that they are, what they're promoting is really...
against Pakistan, goes against
not only
Pakistan.
That, but they are promoting a nuclear holocaust in the end, because Pakistan has not much to defend itself except for nuclear weapons if it's conventionally weak.
Now, in the email string that was initiated by Bina a few weeks ago, and that Nazir stirred up, I think a few very interesting responses from other people that were in that circulation. We haven't yet been able to take the time to give real attention to those here on podcast, but I think we'll try to do that next week. As we get close to the end of this show, I think it's a good time now to introduce Umbreen Ali, our reporter based in Chicago, who recently attended a press screening of the film A Mighty Heart, which is the film starring Angelina Jolie about Daniel Pearl. So let's run that, and then we've got another topic to wind things up on. It's been a great conversation again tonight, and it's a real pleasure to have Umbreen back contributing to us regularly, too.
A Mighty Heart hits theaters on Friday, June 22nd, and it's the story of Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl, as told by his wife, Marianne. The movie is an adaptation of Marianne Pearl's memoir, which details how her husband was kidnapped and murdered at the hands of terrorists in Pakistan. Angelina Jolie takes the lead role of Marianne Pearl, a woman Jolie says she admires because Pearl has every right to be angry at the world, but has instead pushed for dialogue and understanding across cultures. This is exhibited at the end of the film when a journalist asks Marianne how she feels about Pakistanis since her husband was killed in their country. Marianne says that 10 other Pakistanis were killed the same month as Daniel by terrorists. So the Pakistanis are suffering as much as I am, she says. She goes on to say that Karachi is in some ways the front line of terrorism, because where there is misery, terrorists will gain a foothold. Also in the final scenes, Marianne talks about Eid and the Muslim message of charity and sacrifice. The film, a dedication to her son Adam, is a reminder not just to him, but to all of us that hate will only fuel terrorism, and that the true answer is to understand and discuss. We are all suffering collectively, she reminds the American audience, who may otherwise be quick to judge Pakistan. A Mighty Heart was produced by Hollywood actor Brad Pitt and directed by Michael Winterbottom, whose direction captures the chaos of Pakistani society with close cuts of busy markets and shaky camera scenes. This is Winterbottom's second film set in Pakistan, the first being Road to Guantanamo, a story about three British teenagers who end up in American custody in Guantanamo Bay. Like the first film, A Mighty Heart is a political look at the post-9/11 world and the U.S.-led war on terror. The U.S. government is subtly jabbed at for not taking enough action to help Daniel Pearl. In one scene, a government official says that the U.S. government is willing to issue a statement denying that Pearl works for the CIA, and that the CIA will confirm that statement. He says they are doing, quote, all that they can, but clearly they're not. The FBI investigator is also painted as a curt, uncaring figure. After Marianne Pearl says it's most important that everyone share information with one another, the FBI agent demands that everyone leave the room so she can take a private call. This scene reminded me of the way in which Pakistanis often feel bullied by the U.S. government. In the end, it is the Pakistani intelligence team that gets close to finding Daniel Pearl. And through Chief Agent Javed Habib, we catch a glimpse of a caring, moderate Pakistani Muslim. Cuts of him at Friday prayer are aligned with images of Marianne praying silently in her room. The movie is an important glimpse into one of the central countries in the war on terror, bringing the nuance and details of Pakistani society to a mainstream American audience unfamiliar with it. It is an important olive branch extended by the widow of a man tortured and killed at the hands of terrorists. Muslims and Pakistanis should return Marianne's goodwill by supporting her and helping her effort to foster understanding and improve the economic and social conditions of our societies. This is Ambreen Ali for Podcast.
So that was Ambreen Ali on her review of A Mighty Heart, the new film just out or just about to come out.
When is it coming out? I missed
the 22nd of June. So okay. If you're listening to this after that date, it's already out.
Yeah.
Run, don't walk to your nearest theater.
That movie was actually, they tried to make this movie in Pakistan, and Pakistan government did not allow them to make this movie in Pakistan.
I don't know, there was some sort of a controversy.
Like, yeah, because I think they were just bad-mouthing Pakistan or something.
Yeah, we'll check it out regardless.
We'll cover that in coming weeks.
Yeah.
If you have a view about that, about the film A Mighty Heart, or about anything else, phone us in the United States at area code 206-965-9277. Or Skype ID podcast, that's PAKCAST if you have Skype. If you're outside the United States, country code 1, and then area code 206-965-9277. We want to hear from you. The last topic I want you guys' views on is Salman Rushdie, or I should say Sir Salman Rushdie.
So you're saying he's knighted, right?
That's what I hear.
What I would say to that is I don't give a f- The queen can knight whoever she wants. She's not my queen, and I don't care. I could care less about this whole Sir BS, you know?
I don't know. Maybe it's the inferiority complex that Britain.
No, it's quite the opposite. Superiority. They are the best.
I don't know. I mean, because if you think about it,
they've lost it, right? They've become.
That's what I'm saying. But if you still hang on to this nostalgic, you know, dream of yours, you still think that you are superpower of the world,
and you can bestow sirhoods on people.
That's pretty pathetic. Actually,
that's what I'm saying. I don't care about it, really. I don't know. Whatever, you know.
What do you have to say about Salman Rushdie?
I don't have anything to say about him. I think he doesn't affect my health.
I mean, it is. Like,
what does it mean that he was just a?
I think it is Britain's has been powers. Pathetic way of sticking it to the Muslims, the way I look at it. It's like you took, you know, one of our biggest losers of the Muslim community. I was an outcast. He insulted the one person that Muslim love most in the world, and then you give him the highest honor, you know, that you have, and that, you know, to me it demeans the whole knighthood. I mean, even less than what I think of it right now. And it's like if Rushdie is a standard of knighthood, you know, then probably every janitor and you know, and every cleaner should get a knighthood, right?
We should not give these Brits a time of the day about this issue, and they won't do it. And I will believe in this queen. I mean, I don't believe in her. I don't care about her, really. I mean, I don't give a rat's ass about her. The thing is, if she can knight the person who wrote the Da Vinci Code, I'll say okay.
Yeah.